Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Linda Scarpetta, and I'm the director of the Division of Chronic Disease and Injury Control at the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. So today, I would like to explore how state health departments might take advantage of some opportunities to align around primary prevention of injuries and violence and chronic disease prevention and risk reduction. Align those efforts with current federal and state broad-based systems level change initiatives to become better positioned to contribute to the overall population health improvement and reduce disparities and lessen the overall burden of chronic disease and injuries in your states and communities. So today, what I'd like to do is provide an overview of the current landscape of these initiatives, define some common terminology, provide a few examples of how injury and violence and chronic disease programs have coordinated these efforts in Michigan, and provide some suggestions for having a voice in the implementation of these change initiatives at the state level. This is my required disclosure. I have no relationships to disclose. So prior to my current position as division director, I spent about 24 years working at the state health department with the injury and violence prevention program. And so with that area of public health, we tended to focus mainly on primary prevention. And it was really looking at before people interface with the healthcare system. So I really have, I don't have any clinical experience, and I had really little experience working with my chronic disease colleagues. And even though we're all in the same division. So now that I've been division director for the last 2 years, I've really become much more immersed in the efforts at the state level that we're seeing around the rolling out of healthcare reform. So it's pretty exciting. I have to say that I am finally seeing some tangible changes at the state health department level. And so I found the slide, the first one in the upper left corner there. We're at the corner of Change Boulevard and Hope Way. We've had a lot of hope and been excited about the healthcare reform law, and now we're starting to see those changes starting to be rolled out, so it's very exciting. And at the same time, though, I feel like I'm that person down in the lower right-hand corner because there's so much new terminology that's just swimming out there and all these key concepts that are all part and parcel of healthcare reform. And so I think, you know, in order to really be able to take advantage of the many opportunities that are being presented to us and the new partnerships that we could be forming, we really need to have a basic understanding of the current environment of health reform. So there have been many new opportunities provided by the Affordable Care Act that enable states to test innovative payment and health delivery system reform initiatives, as well as improve population health and ultimately social well-being. So this is an exciting time for public health, chronic disease and injury prevention programs to join this vehicle of change that brings together healthcare delivery systems, public health agencies, behavioral health, social services, and other entities to improve health outcomes in communities. I don't expect you to read everything on this slide. I'm just going to kind of talk you through it. This is a graphic from Anthony Rogers at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and it illustrates a desired continuum for healthcare transformation. So to the left, you'll see that we're going from uncoordinated healthcare system toward the right, which is more of a community-integrated healthcare system. So there's a current movement in the U.S. to transform the healthcare system from uncoordinated, episodic, non-integrated care, which is what we would call the baseline or the healthcare system 1.0, to a more coordinated, seamless, efficient, and accountable system of care, which is healthcare number 2.0. And then the goal is to progress even further to a community-integrated system of care, which is healthcare system 3.0. And that's characterized by patient, population, and community-centered care with community health integrated networks capable of addressing the social and economic determinants of health and long-term health care needs. The Community Integrated Health System is an organized system focused on patients and communities with payments based on effectiveness in providing person-centered care that achieves specific outcomes. So we would be paying for value versus volume. And a community integrated health system can begin to address the underlying population health issues and promote healthy community living. It's through such a community integrated healthcare system that both public health and healthcare can achieve their mutual goal of reducing chronic disease and injuries and violence and ensuring the health and wellness of people. So we know that many factors influence a person's health. Healthcare is just one of those factors. And we know that true health reform will not occur by just changing the healthcare system. Injuries, violence, and chronic diseases and conditions are the major drivers of sickness, disability, and healthcare costs in the nation. And the risk factors for injuries, violence, and chronic disease can and must be addressed at two levels. One is the individual level, and that's where we look at maybe the healthcare interventions, and a population level, which is where we can focus on creating policies and environments that promote health. So working at both levels is essential. And many sectors play vital roles in improving the health and well-being of the overall population. So in addition to population health outcomes, they're the product of multiple determinants of health. And these determinants include individual factors, social and economic and environmental factors, medical care, health behaviors, and early life experiences. So to be most effective and impactful in improving health and well-being, we must work together collaboratively across all of our programs and agencies to be able to focus these interventions that target multiple determinants of health. So this is the Michigan Framework for Health Impact, and it's a tool that helps us to understand where our actions can have the greatest population health benefits. So what impacts health? So this framework is adapted from the Health Impact Pyramid that was developed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And there are five tiers of this framework, and it describes the different types of population interventions to improve health. So at the base of the model, you see that there are interventions that have the greatest health impact, and as one moves up the tiers, the interventions require more individual effort, and overall population health impacts are lessened. So the bottom level of the health impact framework represents changes in the socioeconomic factors. So that would be, for example, poverty reduction, improved education, sustainable and adequate income. And these are often referred to as the social determinants of health. So in this framework, we include actions that focus on education, transportation, income, food, and community safety, for example. The second level of the framework represents interventions that change the environmental context to make healthy options the default choice, regardless of your education, income, service provision, or other societal factors. So an individual would have to expend significant effort not to benefit from them. For example, fluoridated water, which would be difficult to avoid because it's in the public water supply, not only improves individual health by reducing tooth decay, but also provides economic benefits by reducing health spending and productivity losses. And seatbelts are another example of a policy that would help make the choice of wearing a seatbelt the easy choice versus not wearing it, because there would be negative consequences. The third level of the framework represents protective interventions that prevent disease and disability. An example of long-lasting prevention is childhood immunizations. And then blood pressure and cholesterol screenings are also examples of prevention actions in this tier. The fourth level is medical care, and it represents ongoing clinical interventions. And evidence-based clinical care can reduce disability and prolong life. And access to health care is an important factor in ensuring individuals with chronic conditions such as hypertension, HIV, diabetes, and asthma receive appropriate medications and management of their conditions. And then the top level, the fifth level, is counseling and awareness. And that represents health education and counseling provided during clinical visits, as well as education in other settings such as community schools and faith-based organizations. So as I mentioned before, there's a lot of new terminology swirling around. And so you may have heard some of these terms if you're in a state health department or even local health departments or out in the community. So I just wanted to go through these and just give you brief definitions of them so you become kind of familiar with some of the key concepts and the key terms that are being used around healthcare reform, at least in my world that I've been hearing. So the first one is the CDC four domain areas. And I would say the last probably 4 or 5 years, CDC, the Chronic Disease Center at CDC has been promoting these four domain areas. And they work to prevent chronic disease and reduce risk factors through these four domains. So the first one is epidemiology and surveillance, which is monitoring trends and tracking progress. The second is environmental approaches to promote health and support healthy behaviors. So that's where the policies come in there. Health system interventions to improve the effective delivery and use of clinical and other high-value preventative services. And then community clinical linkages to improve and sustain management of chronic conditions. The triple aim is something that, when we talk about healthcare reform, this requires achieving the triple goals of improving the experience of care, improving the health of populations, and reducing per capita cost of care. So those are the three things that really are the drivers for health reform. Person or patient-centered medical homes. This is a team-based approach to provide quality primary and preventative health care and coordinate complex patient care. And primary care practices are expected to utilize data and engage in quality improvement activities to improve health outcomes for their patient populations and impact health disparities within their patient populations. Community health workers, you're going to probably hear more and more about that. Sometimes they're called community connectors. They have different names. But these are people who are a frontline public health worker, and they're usually a trusted member of, or they have a close understanding of the community that they serve. And they have a very trusting relationship that enables them to serve as a key link between health and social services in the community and facilitate access to those services in the community. Accountable systems of care, and these are entities that are responsible for improving systems of care to ensure delivery of the right care by the right provider at the right time and the right place. And then payment reform is a big driver of health reform as well. It's changing the incentives. And these models are focusing, as I mentioned before, on value, such as improved health outcome versus volume. So the fee-for-service system that we currently have rewards on volume, but not value. So hopefully, as these payment reforms start to take hold and are more widely spread, that will lead to investments in community prevention and will start to drive some of the population health outcomes that we desire. And population health is a big part of healthcare reform. And it's defined as the health outcomes of a group of individuals, including the distribution of health within that population. So even though you might have a overall healthy population, there could be different segments of the population that have different health outcomes. And the goal would be to make sure we have good health outcomes in all segments of the population. And the last there is the State Model Innovation Design Grants. These are called SIM, State Innovation Model Grants. And this is funding awarded by the U.S. Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. And there are 8 states that are currently funded. And they are the ones that are going to be testing some of these new models for health reform. So I just wanted to give you a few examples of some things that I'm seeing at the State Health Department that are related to health reform. And the first one I'm going to talk about is infrastructure. Last April, our governor announced a plan for merging the Department of Community Health, which is the public health side of things, with the Department of Human Services. And so now we have this big mega agency the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. And this includes population health, behavioral health, Medicaid, aging, and human services. And the desire and the goal is that it's going to facilitate partnerships between those programs that address not only health issues, but also the other determinants of health. So we're just rolling that out. It was effective in April, so it's been only about 6 months. But that is an example of an infrastructure change that can facilitate some of these linkages between, if we think of partners we may not have worked with before, this could be one of those drivers that helps to move that along. The second is a policy example. Michigan is one of the Medicaid expansion states. We have a Healthy Michigan plan, and this is really looking at how do we leverage a public insurance system to promote population health. And one of the things that they did, they just rebid their managed health care plans. And they are requiring that their enrollees complete annual health assessments. And they actually have some questions on there about readiness to change, which is kind of interesting. And they also are requiring their plans to have community health workers now. So there's that interface between the healthcare system and the community integrated system. Am I good on time here? One of the things that we did within our division was we created a health care or a health systems integration work group. And it's a cross-program work group. It's got members from a lot of the chronic disease programs as well as injury and violence prevention. And we've developed this website. It's at michigan.gov/primary care. And this is designed for primary care practices, for primary care physicians, and for case managers or care managers at the primary care practices to increase their awareness about public health programs that are evidence-based and give them some tools and resources to, when they start working with their patients to manage their chronic condition or when they want to counsel about prevention, this is a place where they can go to get some additional resources. So we have the website set up. We also have done some webinars for the care managers at primary care practices, and we also, they do like a quarterly newsletter that goes out to all their practices, and so we've written some articles and tried to promote the website that way. Recently, we just added some information on adverse childhood events because we know that those events can have long-term relationships with risk factors, people having adapting risk factors for chronic disease and injury, such as addictions or substance abuse, and just the impact later in life with the relationship between early childhood experiences and chronic disease. So there were some new materials that are not listed on this slide shot, but we included a fact sheet from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it's called Addressing Adverse Childhood Experiences in Primary Care. And it's a guide for assessing patient-centered medical homes' readiness to address ACEs and other childhood trauma and gives them suggestions for moving toward integrating screening into their care. I think a lot of times primary care, you know, does not, you know, they don't want to screen for something if they can't help or intervene. And so at least this would be a first step, would be to start looking at how can we do screening. And then they can start to look at what are those community resources that are available in my community so that I can refer patients and make sure that they're getting some assistance if they need that. We also have a data report, which is based on our Michigan Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System on ACEs. So that's on there as well if people want to look at the data. And then an infographic from the CDC Division of Violence Prevention that summarizes the findings from the original ACE study in an easy-to-read format. So, just kind of to conclude, these are my suggestions for if you're interested in beginning to get involved in health reform in your state. The first would be identify contacts in your state health department or your governor's health innovation offices. I think maybe many states are now developing health innovation offices to work on health reform. And so you can learn about what their efforts are in your state, what kind of funding may be out there that's being used for your state. And I believe that there probably are health reform initiatives being accomplished or led by your Medicaid offices. So that may be another place to start to learn a little bit more about what's going on. Become involved in population health assessment and planning efforts. I know that for the state innovation model states, they're required to do a population health plan. So you definitely want to be at the table for that because of the contributions that your programs can make to population health. And I mentioned Medicaid before. Medicaid expansion, if you're one of those states, that may offer opportunities for provider education, to do some outreach with providers in terms of linking them with evidence-based programs and resources that are available. And I found that, cultures change really kind of begins at home. And so, you know, how knowledgeable are the people that you work with on health reform? And are you having those discussions? And are you aware of the different terms and the kind of the big picture efforts of what's going on? So I think just trying to learn more about it and thinking about ways that your programs can align and interface with those efforts and just finding ways to start to be at the table and be part of the conversation. And then I think using data and research findings is really important. You can build your case. You can look for ways that you can link to those efforts. What are their goals? What goals do you have? How can you come together and have more of a collective impact? And then finally, I just think there are many opportunities to coordinate with non-traditional partners around healthcare reform. You know, as I mentioned earlier, it's not just healthcare. It's really everybody out there, public health, healthcare, behavioral health, social services, community care systems. So it's a big systems effort, and so there are lots of opportunities for making some contacts and working with non-traditional partners. So exciting time. I just want to encourage all of you to, you know, get involved, start thinking about it. This is the change of the future, the way things are going, and so we need to make sure that we're on board and helping to support these efforts. Thank you.